Shri Brahma Samhita, chapter 5 of 100 chapters of a larger work, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found at the Adikeshita temple in South India, this Shri Brahma Samhita chapter 5. According to Jiva Goswami, the whereabouts of the other 99 chapters is unknown, lost, which is not so uncommon. In his Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami identifies that of the four Vedas, some very tiny percentage is known today. Something in the range of 12-17%, like that. So, fortunately, according to Jiva Goswami, this chapter 5 is the essence of the entire work. Somebody asked last night, who wrote it? Well, it's not said who wrote it, because at the time that Lord Brahma presumably spoke it, there wasn't even something to write with. There wasn't anything. It was darkness in all directions, except for a lotus flower that Lord Brahma's meditation on the mantras, the two mantras that he had received, that was the process that he followed. So, who wrote it? Unknown. But we know Brahma spoke it, including the parts that we discussed last year at Thanksgiving time, the process of creation. He's speaking, in some cases, third person, as, you know, Brahma did this, but it's Brahma speaking. And we know that for sure. At the end, after these prayers, there's Krishna, Govinda, speaking to Lord Brahma before he begins the creation of the universe. How to not lose his Krishna consciousness was when he does his material duties. You know that one. Very practical instruction. How do you, you know, that balance question that people ask? How do you balance between spiritual and material? Anyway, so Krishna speaks directly, or Govinda speaks directly. So please bear in mind, as we're going through these prayers, Lord Brahma is seeing Krishna. He's, although it's darkness everywhere, he's seeing the spiritual world. He's seeing the Loka Vrindavan. He's fully, as the verse we read earlier, well acquainted with the ocean of truth. It's not speculative, perhaps, maybe. It might be like this. It seems to me that not like that. It's we're receiving realized knowledge from the original preceptor of our sampradaya, and the teachings, according to Bhagavad Gita, teachings are to be received in that way, in descending disciplic succession. So he is our original preceptor, and he's hearing Krishna's flute. He's meditating on the sound that came from his mouth after hearing Krishna's flute. He's engaged in this mantra chanting process. Could you put back the screen? Just a little comment about your camera. Your camera is up higher, and I'm down lower, so it looks like I'm, you know, looking at the ground on the screen. I'm not looking at all of you, but the screen looks to the viewers out there in viewer land. I'm talking right now. I don't know what you can do about that, but you should give some thought to what to do about that. Reposition the camera or something. Okay, let's see.
Huh?
So what's going to happen now?
We have
one
in the back.
Oh. Oh, one down, one to go.
We have an extra bulb.
Extra bulb, okay. And they're during the recess. All right. Technology's great when it works. It's really frustrating when it doesn't. So, as I shared yesterday evening, this conversation with this freshman at Washington University, that it is possible, in fact, it is what happens. Those that are in touch with this highest possible consciousness that a soul can attain, it's possible. And what they experience, they can send messages to us through sound. And why not? We do it the other way around. We send signals from your little cell phone, zoom, zoom, and it hits a satellite or whatever technology is, and it bounces back. And they got a receiver and comes over to your cell phone. Hello. And, you know, we do it. So why realize souls can't do it? Use your, you know, stretch your imagination a little bit. And that's how it happens. And that's what we're doing. We're hearing messages from the spiritual world of what it's like. How confidential. How special. You don't have to, like, I'm wondering, you know, maybe it's like this. It's like this. So yesterday we discussed the first verse, the Paribhasha Sutra, that verse that governs the whole rest of the text. The whole rest of the text is illuminating and elucidating this one verse. And then we quickly covered the process of realization that Lord Brahma utilized, which we are to also utilize, except for the yantra part. The yantra, because there wasn't, anyway, there wasn't, it was the process that he used. We instead, by visualizing this abode of Krishna and chanting his mantra, the two things happen. He realized his own identity in his spiritual form, and he realized, he became well acquainted with the ocean of truth with a capital T. He realized, in the words that our acharyas have described, the topmost understandings of Krishna, Govinda, and his abode, and his form, and his loving dealings, and all the mysteries that you'd want to know about, he realized from the process of mantra chanting. And in his case, we don't utilize, Prabhupada never instructed that we should utilize. In fact, I asked Janani Vas and Pankajangri, on your Nrisimha altar you have yantras. Is it part of the process? And it was a, you know, an interesting kind of a no. They're there, just like, you know, the altar is there and other items are there. That, you know, they, in other words, they worship the Shalagram Shilas. They worship the Sringadeva and Prahlad, and the yantras are there. It's the abode. It's depicting in a two-dimensional way is depicting the abode of Lord Shrinivas in Vaikuntha. And that's what the yantra is. And, you know, the places where he goes and does what he does in Vaikuntha. That's what the Nishina yantra is. And so Brahma applied this process. Ours, more, is deity worship along with chanting of mantra. You know, the Bhagavat Vidhi and the Panchatantrika Vidhi, for those who have been around for a while, know what those terms are. The process of hearing and chanting, and the process of deity worship, combining them parallel. Prabhupada calls the deity worship practical, not just theoretical. You use your senses in service of the master of the senses. And then there's so many other things that we engage in devotional service, bhakti, by using our senses, this temporary body, in the service of the master of the senses who has no temporary body. That's the linking process through the medium of our hearing. We do those two. So we hear the process of Brahma's realization, and then yesterday evening we heard the first verse, which was his description of the abode of Krishna. And we heard about Chintamani, that which the abode of Krishna is made of, not made of the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. His abode is made of Chintamani, so it's not only, it fulfills your desires. Everything is fully conscious, it's chinta. I mean, the land that you walk on, the water that you drink, that, you know, everything is fully conscious. I mean, isn't that mind blowing? Who can think that thought? Well, Brahma not only can think that thought, but he can experience and share with us. But so it's beyond our little tiny brain, tiny mind's conception. It's inconceivable, but that's the spiritual world. Abode built with spiritual gems. There's kalpa vriksha. There's wish-fulfilling trees that can supply anything. Anything. Anything that your mind can think of, and even things your mind can't think of. Anything. That's trees. And then the cows. Lakhs and lakhs. One lakh is 100,000. And lakhs, like innumerable. I mean, so there's some finite number, but innumerable. Too many to count. Lakshavritesu suravir avipalayantam. Lakshmi Sahasrashata. And the goddesses of fortune, they're also uncountable. And that's the abode of Krishna. Just a little appreciation, right? Our acharyas have described these things, like, for example, the trees of Vrindavan. Just that topic, the trees of Vrindavan. There's a whole chapter in Vraja Vritti Chintamani. It's a book by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Whole chapter just dedicated to describing the trees. And another name, some of you may know, Prabodhananda Saraswati. Prabodhananda Saraswati was the uncle of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, the brother of Venkata Bhatta, who, after Lord Chaitanya spent the 4 months of the rainy season, he, who was a sannyasi, he gave initiation to Gopal Bhatta Goswami. He came to Vrindavan and lived in Vrindavan. Many of you who have been to Vrindavan, you know where is Kaliyagat. He lived by Kaliyagat. There's a little place, little shrine where his samadhi is, where he, and so although he's a South Indian Sri Vaishnava, he's writing these beautiful prayers describing Vrindavan. And there's a whole chapter dedicated to trees. And it's amazing what these devotees are describing, these acharyas are describing about the trees. And then a whole long section about the cows, and you know, the abode of Krishna is beyond our imagination. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, he writes, that in Vrindavan there's this original Kalpavriksha tree, like Mama Kalpavriksha. And from all the other trees associating with this one tree, they also become Kalpavriksha trees. Because that's how it works. Through association, one becomes qualified. And so this Kalpavriksha tree not only empowers the others, so they fulfill all desires. And it describes what they look like. And so, you know, it's amazing. Some, anyway, that's the abode of Krishna. And then this morning we're going to be discussing what Brahma says about the form of Krishna. If you remember back from the first verse, Sachit Ananda Vigraha, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sachit Ananda Vigraha. So the Ananda Vigraha from the first message is now going to be extended here, and then again, three more times to illuminate the Parivasha Sutra, just of some appreciation of the composition, you know, the artistry of the composition. Okay, so let us hope the audio works, and we'll chant together verse 30. This is the second. I'll make a note right now. This verse speaks of Krishna's flute, and the next verse speaks of Krishna's flute. Hint, Krishna's flute is really important. As he likes cows, he likes his flute. But it's not like the cows aren't ordinary cows, the flute's not an ordinary flute. We'll hear something about Krishna's flute. Oops. Translation. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is adept in playing on his flute with blooming eyes like lotus petals, with head decked with peacock's feather, with the figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. We'll start with an explanation of mantra upasana. Some of you who were with us from last year, you'll recall from text 3 of Brahma Samhita. This is text 30. text 3 discuss the process of mantra upasana. And I'll just refresh your memory if you were here last year and if you're hearing this for the first time. That's fine too. We know the meaning of mantra. Mantra, mind releasing or mind delivering sound. So the material conceptions that we're holding on to, you can let go of those material conceptions through mantra, and then you can be receptive for a spiritual conception. Don't use mantra and try to appreciate something that's not material when you're holding on to something, a material conception. It's not going to go in. It's going to bounce. You'll find a reason why, well, it can't be like that. Or just not even think any thought other than a material thought. So mantra is liberating. It releases us from the grip the mind has on material conceptions, because the mind carries conceptions, according to Bhagavad Gita. Just as the air carries aroma, mind carries conceptions. And to release the mind, so release the mind from material conceptions through the process of worship via a mantra or through a mantra. And upasana means worship. So what Jiva Goswami describes, this is review. Mantra upasana is a process that he compares to a lake. One may be walking along the land and come to a lake. And the mantra is like a lake. It's a particular pastime. Just like all around the room, there's pastimes of, looks like maybe pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. So it's a picture through mantra. The painting is painting and the mantra is sound. So through sound, one pastime of Krishna or a part of a pastime of Krishna is depicted. Or a feature of Krishna's form is depicted through sound. And one worships Krishna through that sound, and it's like entering into the lake. One can realize Krishna or that particular pastime of Krishna through the process, mantra upasana process. And that lake, he goes on, is sometimes connected to a river. Water flowing in, water flowing out, you enter the lake, then you can get into this flowing river, not just stationary lake. And that flowing river is the moving pastimes of Krishna. One pastime flows into the next pastime, flows into the next pastime, and the mature stage of this mantra upasana process is one can enter into Krishna's pastimes. Obviously not with your body, but the soul and consciousness of the soul can be with Krishna as he performs his pastimes. Very elevated. According to Jiva Goswami, when he made his commentary on this verse, and in Krishna Sandarbha on the first mantra that Brahma received, the Gopal mantra, remember from yesterday evening, that mantra that he received from the goddess Saraswati, the internal potency of Krishna, that Gopal mantra. That was a mantra upasana process. And then later, Brahma, matured and became very competent in the Swarasaki process. So Jiva Goswami writes, even today in Vrindavan, I don't know about year 2014 in Vrindavan, but during Jiva Goswami's time, in Vrindavan, there are persons who have perfected that process. Both. And my dear devotees, we're being engaged in the same process. We have the same opportunity. We may not have very much qualification, admittedly. But the mercy that's being showered upon us is amazing. Just visualize a pastime of Krishna by chanting the mantra. And these are pastimes that we'll hear something more about, manifest, unmanifest, prakat, aprakat, nila. One can enter into Krishna's aprakat nila and enjoy pastimes with him. In fact, this is where the writings of our Goswamis come from. It's not imaginative. Some of you are familiar with the pearl pastime, Mukta Charita. Yes. Question. Is Raghunath Das Goswami, who was like renunciation personified, is he interested in fiction? Just making up stories like, you know, Harry Potter. And, you know, a whole long la-da-da-da-da, just... That's not Raghunath Das Goswami. But by this process, he reveals pastime. That's just amazing. It's not fanciful. Or here's a, I mean, there's so many. Mother Janava, the wife of Lord Nityananda, when she was just chanting japa, as we may do at Radhakund. She's just chanting japa. And she saw Krishna's pastime. She described. She saw a bridge over Radhakund, and Radha and Krishna were on the bridge over Radhakund. And she described the pastime that they were performing. I've never seen a bridge over Radhakund. But Janava could see a bridge. You get the idea? And we're being given the same opportunity. Those who are not qualified, all of us, can become qualified. All of us, any one of us. What does it take? It takes the descending mercy and a nice quantity of eagerness to receive the mercy. That's what it takes. Two elements. Descending mercy and eagerness to receive the mercy. So this, here's what Jiva Goswami writes, hopefully, yes, in his Krishna Sandarbha about mantra upasana process, and he's identifying not only this Krishna mantra, the one, or Gopal mantra that we heard about in verse 3 and verse 24, we saw the pictures of it depicted in the yantra. He's describing specifically about this verse, text 30. So we're also right in Brahma Samhita. By what we're doing today, we're being engaged in the mantra upasana process. Here's what he writes. The mantra upasana stage of realization may be compared to a series of lakes within the Ganges River of Swarasaki. Realization in the mantra upasana stage. One hears about Lord Krishna, Nanda Maharaj, and the residents of Rajabhumi, whereas in the Swarasaki stage, one is able to directly see Lord Krishna and his associates. From this we may understand that the Swarasaki stage is very elevated and difficult to achieve. I like this last sentence. The most confidential matters are understandable in that Swarasaki stage of realization. So our acharyas, some of them, have attained that, and their commentaries are from that platform. Like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes Krishna's thinking was like this. And he described what Krishna's thoughts are. It's not imaginative. It's not, you know, like he has some kind of mind-reading power or something. He's in touch with the internal potency. And we're being given the same opportunity. So as we go along, you'll see this mantra upasana image again on the screen. And I'd like all of you to listen with that idea. Remember from yesterday, enter into the spirit of this hymn. I'm going to at the end review the different pieces or parts of this mantra. Because according to Sanatana Goswami and Hari Bhakti Vilas, when you chant mantra, you should simultaneously hear the sound or meditate upon the meaning of the mantra. If it's these Gayatri mantras, you don't say aloud. In Brahma Samhita, you say aloud. And enter into the mood, the feeling of the mantra. So this is a rehearsal, and then we'll do the performance at the end of this mantra. There's the first mantra. Again, this is the mantra that's described in text 3, then again in text 24. It's a depiction of Krishna's abode, with Radha and Krishna in the middle, and you see the tree, the desire tree behind them, that's the spiritual world, that's the original Kalpa Vriksha tree, and the different elements, six-sided mantra, or the hexagonal mantra within the yantra. So that's a mantra upasana type, and so is text 30, and according to Jiva Goswami, text 32. So now we're going to go into the elements of the verse. Text 30. Those of you that have read Nectar Devotion, you know that Rupa Goswami says, he writes, there are 64 principal characteristics or qualities of Krishna, and amongst them, four are exclusively found in Krishna's feature in Vrindavan, or Govinda, because that's what we're speaking about in Brahma Samhita. And the forms of Vishnu or Narayana in Vaikuntha, etc., they don't have these four. They have 60, but not these. Four are uniquely possessed by Krishna. Here is the four. He is the performer of wonderful varieties of pastimes. This is directly quoting Nectar Devotion, especially his childhood pastimes. Then, he is surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of Godhead. Remember from yesterday, the cows love Krishna and Krishna loves the cows, but everything and everyone in Vrindavan, they have the same love for Krishna, of different varieties of love, but most amazing, wonderful love for Krishna. That's a quality of Krishna. Then, he can attract all living entities all over the universes, plural, by playing on his flute. We'll hear something about that in the next verse, as well as this verse, that all over the universes, Krishna's flute playing is going, is stunning living entities. And the final, the fourth, is he has wonderful excellence of beauty, which cannot be rivaled anywhere in the creation. So note that the first two are highlighted in blue, and the bottom two are highlighted in red. So according to Bhaktisiddhanta, this text 30 is dealing with the form of Krishna. So that's number four, his beauty. And then his pastimes is in text 31. That's the first two. And both of them speak about Krishna's flute. You see what's going on here? The udipan, the stimulations for ecstatic love, are being given by Lord Brahma in these prayers. Those of you that know Nectar Devotion, to awaken the soul within the body has love of God dormant, like a seed stores a tree or a plant or whatever seeds are the seed of. So the soul has the seed of love of God. The topmost stage of love of God. And what's the fructification or awakening of that? There's udipans, or that which stimulates ecstatic love, the kind of love that's in Vrindavan, ecstatic love, you know, spontaneous love. And these features, these four especially, stimulate that and the details of them. So that's what Brahma is doing, and we'll be exploring some of that. So may your ecstatic love for Krishna be stimulated by association with Brahma Samhita. So there's this Krishna's matchless beauty, that's text 30, and these two subparts, Krishna's lotus eyes are described or mentioned. Krishna's bodily hue is mentioned in this verse, text 30. And then, as well, Krishna's flute playing. So that's the elements that I'm going to remind you. At the end, I'm going to, this is rehearsal, and then we're going to perform mantra upasana. So listen with that thought in mind. Venum kanvantam, this is Krishna is carrying his flute, taken from nectar of ocean. Krishna doesn't just have a flute. He has lots of flutes and varieties of flutes, and there's different names for those varieties of flutes. This one is mentioned Venu. Venu is very small, not more than 6 inches long, with 6 holes. Murali is about 18 inches with a hole at the end and 4 holes in the body of the flute. And Bhamsi flute is about 15 inches long with 9 holes. But that's not all the variety that Krishna has. It's that much more variety. Krishna has a longer Bhamsi, which is called Mahananda. Everybody hears some of the difference between Mahananda and Sambhogini. Is it okay? Is everything all right? Okay. When it is still longer, it's Aparshini. When it's even longer, it is called Anandi. The Anandi flute is very pleasing. The Coward Boys, they like that one especially. And there's a, they have their little private name, Bhangshuni. These flutes were sometimes bedecked with jewels. Sometimes they were made of marble. Sometimes of hollow bamboo. When the flute is made of jewels, imagine a flute made of jewels, not like with jewel, but made of jewels. Some Mohini. When it's made of gold, it is called Akarshini. But the sound of Krishna's flute, besides the other varieties, Krishna's flute is amazing. There's a book that Shivaram Maharaj has written called Venu Gita. It's like this thick, just about Krishna's flute. There's a lot to say about Krishna's flute. We're just going to say a little. There, one of my favorite places in Vrindavan. Everyone has their favorite places in Vrindavan. One of mine is Tamer Kadamba. Kadamba is a type of tree with nice Kadamba flowers. And there's a grove of Kadamba trees, that's why it's Tamer Kadamba. And it's very close to where Krishna lived with Nanda Maharaj at Nandagram. And as Krishna was coming back from the days taking care of the cows, he would climb one of the kadamba trees to the very top of the kadamba tree and play upon his flute. And when he was playing upon his flute, he'd be calling the cows. So his flute didn't just make this nice, you know, musical sound. His flute can make other kinds of sounds, because he can do whatever he wants. So he was calling the groups of cows. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes in detail. There are 108 groups. There are 900,000 cows, and they were grouped. They were grouped. 100 of them were grouped according to color, four colors. And Krishna would call 100 names of the groups, and he lists the names of the groups. It's a very long paragraph, a long description. He would call their name. Imagine if you were a cow and Krishna called your name. What would you feel? So their ears were perked, waiting for Krishna. So every day he would call their name. And they go, you know, you ever seen cows run? They would run because Krishna was calling their name. It's very detailed. And then the other eight were very special. They were one of the eight. This is called Mridanga Mukhi. Mukhi means face. And there's a mridanga, this, you know, two-ended drum. So they had faces shaped like mridangas. Krishna called their group. There was a Simha Mukhi, cows that have faces that look like lions. And like this, Krishna's flute, he would sometimes play upon his flute by the river Jamuna, and the river Jamuna would stop, stunned. Things that were moving would stop. Things that were not moving would move. The birds that would fly in the air, they were stunned, and they would fall to the ground, stunned. The river Jamuna would stop. Krishna's nearby. Maybe he will come, and some of the dust from Krishna's feet will fall in my water. She was motionless, waiting for that. And then Krishna would take advantage. Not only would he become motionless, sometimes it would become hard, so the cowherd boys could walk across the river Jamuna to the other side. Sometimes, this is our Acharya is describing, sometimes Krishna would transform his flute into a boat so that the cowherd boys could cross to the other side of a river. Sometimes when it was very hot and dry, Krishna would play upon his flute and part of the hill would melt and water would come down the side of the hill just from the sound of Krishna's flute. Inconceivable. So Krishna wasn't just like, you know, a classical flutist. Not that. Otherworldly, inconceivable capacity of Krishna's flute playing. We'll hear some more as we go further. Venam kanvantam. Krishna's capacity is attracting all living entities. The foremost attracted by Krishna's flute that we hear regularly about is the gopis. You can see in the painting in the left hand side, there's Krishna playing on his flute at Vansi Vat. Vansi is one of Krishna's flutes, and Vat means a banyan tree. So it's a place in Vrindavan where Krishna would go beneath the banyan tree, and he would call the gopis with his flute. But it's described, it wasn't just like, oh, that's a charming sound, let's go. Forcibly he would carry them. Because their love for Krishna was such that when they heard Krishna's flute, they were forcibly moved by the sound of Krishna's flute. And literally, they would become transcendentally mad by the sound of Krishna's flute. And so many paintings, beautiful paintings of Krishna with his flute. Sometimes the gopis were envious of Krishna's food, because the food was always tasting the lips of Krishna. And so they would criticize the food. They would say, sometimes they would praise, what austerities this food must have undergone to become tasting of Krishna's lips. Then sometimes they become angry and say, a flute is a male. And how come a male is tasting Krishna's lips? This isn't right. And they would sometimes steal Krishna's flute. And they'd pass it on to another gopi, and then to another gopi, and to another gopi. And Krishna was attached to his flute, and he's running here and there looking for his flute. Of course, he's omniscient, Supreme Lord, this is Leela. Beautiful paintings of Krishna and his flute playing, charming millions of cupids. And Aravinda, his eyes were lotus shaped, with blooming eyes like lotus petals. Very common metaphor, eyes like lotus petals. Blooming eyes like lotus petals. Aravinda Dalaya Taksham. And, of course, the deity form of Krishna shows this. Paintings also show the lotus eyes of Krishna. So, a reminder, this is a rehearsal. It's not just information. I'm inviting you to enter into the mantra upasana process. So take away your college, university, you know, bhav hat, and enter, put into the devotional hat or mode, or open your heart this way, because we're learning from Lord Brahma how to do the mantra upasana process. So, Venum Kanvantam Aravinda Dalaya Taksham Barhavatamsam. This is Barhavatamsam, indicates head decked with peacock feather. Krishna likes peacocks in addition to cows. They're very colorful, and they like Krishna too. So, Krishna wears peacock feather. Always. And the deity outfits in Vrindavan, there's a very famous one, very, very much loved one. This is Radha Shyamasundara in Vrindavan. And a close-up of Shyamasundara, just simply peacock feathers. And not to be outdone, there's Krishna Balaram in similar their peacock dress. But whether in the deity form or Krishna's actual pastimes, we always find peacocks in Vrindavan and Krishna decorating himself with peacock's feather. And Asitam Buddha Sundarangam. Sound is not working. That's supposed to be the sound of thunder. Oh, that's too bad. Don't know what happened over there. Soon season. The beauty deity of Krishna includes a body whose hue or color is like that of a fresh monsoon cloud. What's up? No, Prabhupada would sometimes speak about, you know, the color black may not be thought of as especially attractive, but there's a great acharya amongst our acharyas whose name is Raghava Goswami or Raghava Pandit. Some of you may know of Raghava Pandit from Govardhan Parikrama. Those who have done Govardhan Parikrama, where you go all the way down, 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 down to the very bottom, the southernmost part of Govardhan Hill. There's Lotababa, that deity. And then right in that vicinity is where Raghava Pandit stayed. He stayed in a cave so he could chant with, you know, he didn't have what we have, these, you know, sound things he put under ears. He can't hear anything. So he just was in a cave and would chant his job in a cave. And in Bhakti Ratnakar, it's described that he, the detail of his Vrindavan Parikrama, where he took two of Jiva Goswami's students throughout the whole of Vrindavan and described the pastimes in the whole of Vrindavan. Raghava Pandit was a contemporary of Lord Chaitanya, younger, and a great acharya. So he wrote a book, Sri Hari Bhakti Ratna. Ratna means jewel. The jewel of devotion to Hari manifests prakash. So there he asks the question and then answers the question, why is Krishna blackish or shama? Why is it that the form of the personality of Godhead, which he manifests only by his own wish, and which is made of the sweetness of transcendental pastimes, is famous everywhere for its dark complexion? His name is Shama Sundara. Shama is blackish and Sundara is beautiful. So he answers, he eternally manifests the color Shama within which all colors rest. Like Krishna is the source of everything. And you take colors and mix colors together. Maybe you did this when you were little. Maybe the kids have done it recently. You take paints and mix this color, that color, that color, the other color, and stir them all together. What do you get? Black. But it's not exactly like pitch black. It's kind of like this muddy black. Because that's the color of all colors. And Krishna is the source of everything. He's the source of all colors. So he's Shama. But then he ends, his complexion is not the material color, black. Just like the cows of Vrindavan, they're Surabhi cows. They're not like cows here. This freshman at Washington University was saying, no, not cows like this. Right? It's not cows like this. It's Surabhi cows. And flutes, not like flutes here. Krishna has another variety of flutes, altogether different. And his color is not like, you know, somebody might have a black sweatshirt on or something. Not like that. Transcendental reservoir of all color, Shama. And then the next line, Kandarpa Koti Kalaniya Vishesha Shopam. I'm going to remind you again, this is practice for mantra upasana at the end. So please remember. We'll recite the verse again and remember, part of visual is helping us to remember what the word meanings are. Krishna's unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. So, who's Cupid?
God of love.
God of love. No, Valentine's Day. If you're American. So, Cupid, he's a personality in the heavenly planets, and he has this little bow and arrow thing, and she sees him, he sees her, woo woo woo. There goes the arrow. The bone struck by the arrow of Cupid. But the loveliness of Krishna charms millions of Cupids, as Cupid charms everybody. I mean, this insect and that insect get hit by the Cupid's arrow. Whoa, look at her. Oh, look at him. Whoa, whoa, whoa. There's this description of Indra becoming worried that the austerities of Narayan were so severe. Maybe they have a plan to, like, take over my kingdom. So, to stop that, he sent Cupid on a mission. Go hit Narayan with one of your arrows and take with you some of the most beautiful damsels of the heavenly region. Go, Cupid, go. So he came. They went to the abode or the ashram of Narayan. Narayan immediately, they understood. Narayan has stepped forward. You see, Nara is in the background. Narayan has stepped forward and stood in his threefold bending position and exhibited unlimited numbers of goddesses of fortune whose beauty was thousands and thousands of times more than any one of the damsels of Vrindavan. And when Cupid saw that, he dropped his bow. He was charmed by the beauty of Narayana and the goddesses of fortune. He disclosed the whole mission, apologized profusely. Narayana smiled and said, I knew. That's why he did this. So, his unique loveliness is charming millions of Cupids, and it's not just Krishna charms Cupid. Not just Krishna charms the gopis. Krishna charms everyone. His unique loveliness. Again, mantra upasana kandara kokoti kamaniya visheshishotam. Krishna is so attractive, he even attracts Krishna. This is a painting of a pastime that's described where Krishna saw his reflection in the marble. And Vidagdha Madhava by Rupa Goswami, he saw that reflection and thought, look at this beautiful personality. Who is this? I would love to have a loving relationship with this personality. But of course, foremost amongst all those who are attracted by Krishna's unique loveliness is the gopis. Very nice painting of the gopis just seeing Krishna. They're embracing a tamal tree because a tamal tree is blackish, and so they're fulfilling their heart to some degree by embracing the tamal tree. Here's Krishna returning from his day taking care of the cows with the cowherd boys following behind him, and the young gopis. The one with the crown on, guess who that is? Radharani, the queen of Vrindavan. And Krishna's unique loveliness is, you can see by the expressions, charming them. Not with, you know, this mundane boy-girl thing is a mundane thing. That the charming of the residents of Vrindavan have no material lust or material attraction of any kind whatsoever. It's pure love. Okay, you ready for the now the exam at the end of the class, the mantra upasana process. Those of you that have your books, if you don't know the verse, you can pull your book out. Just say the verse, but meditate on the meaning, and as Prabhupada said, enter into the spirit of this hymn as a regular daily function. Let's chant the verse together. Vedam kamantam aravinda tadalakasham varhavatam samasitam buddhasundarangam Tandarakoti Kamaniya Vishesha Soham Govindavadi Purusham Amaham Vachani. If we do what Prabhupada instructed us to do, that would be nice and do what Prabhupada instructed us to do, we will be engaging in the mantra upasana process, which, if done sincerely and regularly, one can then visualize Krishna. Not imaginatively, one can visualize Krishna. And in particular pastimes, it appears in the heart. Bhaktisiddhanta's language calls this swarasaki, a jubilation of the heart. That the pastimes of Krishna in a more mature stage may appear in your heart, and not only appear in your heart, but you participate in them in your particular rasa. Amazing. That's what we're being given the opportunity for. So, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Vachami. Now we're ready for verse 31. And so just as a review, this is the third of this first group of verses. The first group of verses is describing Krishna's abode. And then the next one is Krishna's form. And this one is Krishna's pastimes. At least the emphasis goes upon Krishna's pastimes. Now, is the sound going to work from my computer, or do I need the microphone? It'll work. Let's see. Govinda, the primeval Lord, round whose neck is swinging a garland of flowers, beautified with the moon locket, whose two hands are adorned with the flute, and jeweled ornaments, who always revels, this is Bhaktisiddhanta's language, relishes, enjoys, who always revels in pastimes of love, whose graceful threefold bending form of Shyamasundara is eternally manifest. So that's meditation for this mantra. And special emphasis is going to the pastimes, most prominent or famous everywhere, of Krishna's pastimes is Krishna's rasa dance. And this verse, text 31, is going to be further expanded in greater detail in text 37. So we're not going to discuss so much the detail of the pastimes, but it means the understanding of how the pastimes take place. So, Alova Chandra Kalasatvarya Maya Vamshi Ratnangadam. This is this Chandraka. Chandra means moon. So, Bhaktisiddhanta has called it a moon locket. He has some kind of a chain or a necklace. He has a stone that shines like the moon shines. How'd you like to have one of those? If you become Christian, you can have one of those. That's not possible. We just like Krishna to have one of those. On your left, that's the Govinda deity in New York, Radha Govinda. On the right, this is Radha Madhava, who also is decorated with nice garlands. One of the many wonderful attributes of our temple president in New York, Rama Bhadra, is he loves decorating Radha Govinda. And one of the biggest items in the budget of the temple is flowers. He loves having exquisite, fragrant, colorful, it's just his meditation. He meditates on the outfits. He personally designs the outfits. He goes to Vrindavan and arranges with the best of our outfit makers. You make this one, you make that one. He buys the cloth. He orders the flowers. He's absorbed in what this verse is describing. Hello, the Chandra, there's no moon rocket though. And then Pranaya Kevi Kala Vilasam means he revels in pastimes of love. Kevi means pastimes. Pranaya Kevi Kala Vilasam. So I'm going to share a little different, some of the wonderful pastimes of Krishna. This one is a painting of a pastime of Krishna that takes place near Govardhan Hill. On the side of Govardhan Hill is a very beautiful architecture called Kusum Sarovar. The place is Kusum Sarovar. Sarovar means lake, and Kusum is like a type of a lotus. So a lake of lotuses. So now there's an architecture. One king constructed it some time ago, but it's in a place where Radha and Krishna performed the pastime that I'm going to narrate at Krishna Sarovar. So the pastime has to do with an annual event that took place during Krishna's time, and it still takes place every year, a festival. Different days, there's special festivals. So during the time of the year, after the rainy season, there's so many flowers. So in the home or the area of Srimati Radharani at Varsana, they have a festival, a Janji festival. The Janji festival is all the young girls in Varsana, they have the opportunity to go out during the day, gather flowers, and decorate the doorway of their home with some floral arrangement. And then in the evening, the elders come along and judge what's the who did the best floral arrangement. And then someone wins the prize. Girl is honored. But you can imagine what a beautiful festival that is. Some places in America, they have some contests like that about Christmas decorations. Do you have that here in Seattle? You don't know.
It's a couple of neighborhoods.
Some neighborhoods. Some people like, you know, deck their homes out with all whatever they do, and somebody comes along. So this is honoring not Santa Claus and the reindeer, but it's honoring the huge natural beauty of Vrindavan. So on the morning of Janji festival, Radha and the gopis, they went really early in the morning to one of their best places for getting flowers, was Kusum Sarovar, because there was a champak grove. Champak is a type of tree, beautiful yellow flowers, and many, many other flowers just like you see. So Radha and the gopis, early in the morning, went to Kusum Sarovar and began gathering flowers. Krishna's parrot was spying to find out what the gopis were doing. And his parrot came and landed on Krishna's windowsill and told Krishna, this morning, Janji festival day, they're going to Kusum Sarovar. Krishna was very happy. He knew he made a plan, like a flash. He stayed in bed instead of getting up in the morning and was holding his stomach and moaning and groaning. Oh. And Mother Jasoda came to his room saying, what's the matter, Gopal? What happened? Oh, I don't feel so good. Get a doctor, quick. The doctor came, couldn't find anything wrong with him, but recommended he should stay home today, shouldn't go herd the cows. So Mother Jasoda said, that's okay, Balaram. You're his elder brother. You know how to take care of the cows. You go with the cowherd boys and you take care of the cows. And Balaram understood Krishna's guidance. So the cowherd boys left with the cows. After everyone had gone, the scene was quiet. Krishna threw off the cover and jumped out of bed and got on his disguise of a gardener and went, guess where? Kusum Sarovar. And as Srimati Radharani was gathering flowers, she was, normally she would have more flowers in her basket than all the other gopis combined. She's expert at everything. But Krishna, at a distance, he was watching. And her cloth, her sari, got caught in a thorn bush. So she was trying to remove the thorn. And then as she was trying to remove the thorn, another part of her sari got caught. Another part of her sari got caught. So the gardener, seeing her in distress, she called out to the gopis, Lalita, Vishaka, come now. But she was so far away, they didn't hear her. So the gardener came and released her cloth from the thorn. And then the other thorn and the other thorn. And she was so thankful. She said, how did you know I was in this difficulty and for you? He said, my name is Vanamali. Vana means forest, and Mali, the gardener. Vanamali. My name is Vanamali. I'm a servant of the king. I look after the king's gardens. And I was attending to my duties and saw you in distress, and so I came to help you, but I have to go now. I have many duties. So Krishna left. And Radharani was in a daze, having seen Krishna. Of course, she was, the Leela was, she didn't recognize it was Krishna. She thought it was Vanamali. And this wandering around. She even forgot to pick flowers. And later the gopis found Radharani and saw Radharani's basket was nearly empty. And they asked, what happened? And she explained what happened and said, you know, I don't know what it is, but my mind is just attracted to that gardener. I don't know who that person is. She said, well, time is passing and we have to go back and start our decorations. So we'll give you some of our flowers. So they're making their plan to go back to Varsana. And then comes the gardener. And the gardener says, look at this. You are thieves. I'm the gardener of the king. And I've always wondered, who is it that's stealing the king's flowers? You're in big trouble. And he took his stick and hit the bottom of their baskets. And all the flowers went flying in all directions. And the gopis were very angry. But look what you've done. And all together they pounced on the gardener. But as they grabbed the gardener, they felt this stick in the back of his head, that it was Krishna's flute. So they understood, you're not Vanamali, you're Van Bihari. Bihari means the enjoyer of pastimes. And look what you've done, you've spoiled all the flowers have fallen to the ground, how are we going to use the flowers for decoration in the Janji festival? Well, Krishna said, don't worry. I'll take them to the river Jamuna, wash them and bring them back. I can do it very quickly. He said, the river Jamuna is so far away. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Krishna said, I'll solve the problem. He took his flute and stuck his flute into the ground and made a big depression just with his flute. He has a very versatile flute. And then filled up the depression with celestial water and washed all the flowers and gave the flowers back and said, now you can go do your decoration. He said, well, we can do our decoration, but you've offended Srimati Radharani and you should be punished. And so Krishna agreed that he would decorate Radharani with the flowers before they went back to decorate their doorways. So you see this painting, this is in the ceiling of this magnificent structure, the Kusum Sarovar architecture. And in the ceiling, there's paintings of Krishna's pastimes. And this is one of those paintings on the ceiling of Krishna with a mustache. Krishna doesn't have a mustache. And his peacock feather. And he's decorating the hair of Srimati Radharani with the flowers. But actually, he doesn't stop there. He does a whole like deity worship. He decorates her hair. There's some very beautiful paintings. Of course, Radharani's looking in the mirror, not at herself. She's looking at her beloved Krishna. Very beautiful painting. And then after decorating Krishna's hair, he uses different, you see by his right foot down there, little ointments and fragrant oils, and then jewels on her fingers, and a whole array of different ornaments to place on her wrists, and he's deity worship, worshiping Srimati Radharani. And when this worship procedure is finished, the gopis then say, well, that's very nice. Now you've atoned for your offending Srimati Radharani, but what are we going to do? It's so late in the day, we have to go back and decorate. So Krishna said, well, just like I have a gardener costume, I have a gopi costume. I'll go back and decorate Radharani's doorway and she'll win the prize. So they agreed and Radharani won the prize. Ratnangadam Pranaikeli Kala Vilasam. There's three more pastimes. This is a pastime of Radha in Varsana becoming angry with Krishna. It's called Van Lila or Lila of anger. She pouts. So early in the morning, Vrinda Devi made an arrangement for a meeting between Radha and Krishna. All the parents relayed the messages. Krishna knew where to go at what time. Radharani knew where to be at the right time. And she waited and waited, and Krishna didn't come. You know, when you're like waiting for a bus or waiting for something, you know, time while you're waiting seems like a long time. You know that one? What to speak of Radharani waiting for Krishna? Yugayatam Yeshena Chakshusha Ayasayatam. Where one moment seems like years. Krishna was late. So Radha sent one of her messengers to find where is Krishna. She found where is Krishna. Krishna was with Chandravali. And very regrettably, Radha's messenger came back and reported that. And Radha then became very angry, and she went sulking at Mangar. Those of you who have been to Varsana, it's one of the hills. So she went to Mangar, and Krishna came looking for Radha, couldn't find Krishna, couldn't find Radha anywhere. Vrinda told her what happened. Radha became angry with me. So when Radha becomes angry, it becomes, Krishna knows, we should know, it becomes very difficult to break her anger. But in this particular pastime, Vrinda Devi had a suggestion. Vrinda Devi said, I'm very expert at disguises. Of course, Krishna doesn't need disguises. He can just manifest himself however he likes. But Vrinda Devi got some service. She made a gopi disguise and said, I'll go to where Radha is and I'll tell Radha that there's this new gopi in Vrindavan and her name is Shama Saki. Saki means like an assistant to the gopis. Her name is Shama Saki and she's really good at singing. Is it okay if I bring her here? I know that you're in an unhappy mood, but maybe hearing her singing, you'll become happy again. So Radha agreed. And Shama Saki, Krishna, came before Radha in her sulking mood and then asked Radha what type of music, this long narration of this raga and these notes and this detail and that detail, and I don't even know what all the terms are. But Krishna knows and Radha knows. So she selected what she wanted to hear. And Shama Saki started to sing. And Shama Saki sang so beautifully that Radha's angry mood changed. And she became very enlivened and said, where did you learn such singing? And Shama Saki said, I've heard your singing and I'm just learning from you how to sing nicely. And Radharani embraced, I don't know how I can thank you enough for relieving me of this big anxiety, and embraced the Saki. And as she embraced the Saki, she felt ecstatic love erupting in her body, and then she realized, this isn't Shama Saki, this is Shama. This is Krishna. She was very happy, and you can see the gopis are also very happy. This is a painting illustrating something that's found in Nectar of Devotion. The lady with the broom in her hand, that's the mother of Abhimanyu. Her name is Jatila, and Abhimanyu is her son. And in the Leela of Radha and Krishna, it's a long story which we don't have time for just now, but there was this so-called marriage of Krishna to all the young gopis on the occasion of Krishna stealing the calves and cowherd boys, which is a nice pastime, but I'm not going to narrate. So the so-called husband of Radharani was Abhimanyu. And regularly, Krishna would go to the house of Abhimanyu and Jatila and enjoy pastimes with Radharani. In this particular case, he dressed like Abhimanyu. And he made his voice sound just like Abhimanyu. And when Abhimanyu was to come home, Krishna is omniscient. So he went and told Jatila, "Look out! This rascal, Krishna, he's coming to your home in a disguise, looking like Abhimanyu. Don't let him in." So Jatila, following the advice of her so-called, well, Krishna in disguise as her son, you see behind Krishna's back is his crown with the peacock feather, standing behind Jatila. And Jatila's not letting her son enter the house. "Get out of here, you rascal, you imposter. We know who you are. Forget it, you're not coming into my house. Get out of here." And Abhimanyu thought his mother's gone mad. And then, by use of the mantra upasana process, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur reveals in a book called Prema Samputa another pastime of pranaya keli kala vilasam, Krishna reveling in pastimes of love. And this is very detailed, most amazing, most elevated pastime. And it goes like this, in summary. Krishna, one day, he became inspired to come to visit the place of Srimati Radharani in Varsana in a different disguise, in the disguise of a goddess, like a celestial goddess. And when Krishna came to Varsana as a celestial goddess, he was in the mood of great sadness. Terrible, unbreakable unhappiness. And so the gopis, they saw this new girl in such a sad condition, knowing that Radharani is very compassionate. They brought the girl, the goddess, before Srimati Radharani. But the goddess stayed off at a distance, looking down, very sad. So there's a whole long discussion of Radharani trying to cheer up this very sad young gopi, who said nothing, who wouldn't respond, looking down, tears coming down her cheeks. And Radharani tried this and tried that and tried this, said this, you know, very amusing things and cajoling things, suggesting that my father, Vrishabhanu, has given some special oil. And I think if I massage this oil on the body of this young gopi, certainly whatever ail is harming her will be cured. And then Radharani said, "Is it possible that the sadness that you're feeling is you have heard the flute of Shyamasundara, and hearing the sound of Shyamasundara's flute, your heart is now broken into many pieces?" The goddess looked up, lifted her head slightly, and said, "I'd like to reveal to you why I have come. I am your worshiper. In the heavenly kingdom, we also hear Krishna's flute. And when we hear Krishna's flute, we become enormously attracted to Krishna's flute, but my understanding is, I wanted to understand what is the attractiveness of Krishna's flute. So I came here. And Radha said, you're very intelligent. Very few pursue the question, why is everyone so attracted to Krishna's flute? Please tell me what you have understood. He said, my heart is broken. I came, let me disclose why I have come. I came attracted to the sound of Krishna's flute, and I went to a place called Vanchivat, and Krishna was playing upon his flute, and I saw how your loving attraction was awakened, and then suddenly Krishna just left you and went to some other place with some other gopi, and I cannot understand how you can be attracted in love with this terrible person, Shyamasundara. He's asking her questions about her love for him. That is why I have come. I don't want to see you have anything to do with him. He's so unreliable and he's so despicable and he does all these bad things, and I'd like to break your love for him. That is why I have come. And Radha smiles, says, you are very intelligent. Let me share with you the nature of love. Such a beautiful description. Radharani is describing the essence of love and her love for Krishna. Krishna wanted to hear this, so he performed his pastime. I know all about Krishna. And my loving of Krishna cannot be broken by anything. Because let me share something with you. Krishna is in my heart. And I am in Krishna's heart. In this way we are inseparable. And all these things that Krishna does that to you look harsh and cruel, it's just part of the love of Krishna for me and my love for Krishna. But it's not possible that Krishna can leave my heart or that I can leave Krishna's heart. Even when he does the things that you say he does that look like he doesn't love. Then I forget the question that the goddess asks, but there's some other question that leads Radha to then say, let me disclose something even more confidential. No one understands this, but I will share this with you because you seem so receptive and able to understand deep subject matters. Actually, Krishna and I are one. There are two forms, but we're actually one entity. So not only Krishna is in my heart and I am in Krishna's heart, we're one entity. So there's no question of anything abandoning love for Krishna. This is my, you came to hear this disclosure, this is my disclosure. And the goddess said, now I am very happy. And got up and left. Suddenly. And Radharani is now in this mood of appreciating the depth of her love for Krishna. And why? And then she wants to thank the goddess who brought this out. But the goddess has gone. And so she asks, where has this goddess gone? I want to thank her. Oh, I missed something very important. The goddess said, well, if you think, I don't doubt your word, but evidence is stronger than words. So if your words are true, then just by your meditating upon Krishna, Krishna will come. So can you do that? Radharani agrees. She sits in complete meditation upon Krishna. In full vision of the other gopis, Krishna removes his disguise as a goddess It is standing before Radharani as Shyamasundara. What an amazing pastime. And Radharani opens her eyes, and there is Shyamasundara. And she's feeling loving ecstasy, seeing Shyamasundara before her. And then she appreciates that she appreciates what this goddess has done, opened her heart and brought Krishna and so forth. Where is the goddess? I want to thank her. She's in the next room. She left. And Radharani goes to see the goddess, but there's no goddess because Krishna is there. So, Prema Samputa is one example of unlimited examples of Krishna's pranayam keli kala vilasam, Krishna's reveling, enjoying in most amazing pastimes of love with all the residents of Vrindavan. Part of our Vaishnava calendar is the Julan festival, again commemorating the pastime of Krishna on the swing. And we place the deity on the swing and swing Radha Krishna. So it's not just commemorating that, but if one has depth of love, it's actually Radha Krishna on the swing. Like these beautiful paintings depicting these pastimes. From Krishna's boat pastimes. The last line, Shamam Tribhangalalitam Niyata Prakasham. Niyata Prakasham. Krishna eternally manifests himself in this beautiful form of threefold bending feature, just like this painting shows. And in our deity depiction of Krishna also, Shamam Jivangalalitam Niyata Prakasham. In fact, most of the paintings that you see of Krishna, sometimes he's sitting and so forth, but when he's standing, it's this very delightful position. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. So this is the first three verses of the prayers, Krishna's abode, Krishna's form, Krishna's pastimes, shared with us by Lord Brahma in this wonderful literature, Brahma Samhita. So any comments or questions from anyone? Yes.
Just wait for the mic.
Here comes the mic.
Yeah.
Stand by. Don't go far away.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I can count on you for a question or two or three.
I had a question regarding the conversation that we had yesterday about the word Samhuma. And in Valmiki Ramayana, in Valmiki Ramayana, the first verse that Hanuman says is Samhrama Tyajitam Yesha. He tells Sugriv not to worry or to discard all perplexity.
And discard all?
Confusion or fear.
Confusion or fear?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the translation given for Samhrama. And how is that translation, how is that Samhrama mentioned in Valmiki Ramayana different from the one mentioned in Brahma
Samhita? I have to look at what, you know, to process your question, I have to look at the Sanskrit carefully before answering. So maybe after the whole morning is over, you can give me the reference, I can look at the other reference, and during the next, like this evening's question and answer, give me a little time to, like, understand the question clearly. Okay.
It's in Kishkinda Kund, the second chapter.
You put it together in a piece of paper, provide it to me, and I'll make a proper response. I'll try.
Okay.
Anything else? All the way in the back?
This is from the last session we had last year. So I think towards the end of the discussion, towards the last verses of Brahma Samhita, you were explaining that though there are some material desires, when one engages in Krishna service, he gets purified. Like where Krishna is speaking to Lord Brahma.
You listened very well.
So, but in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the idea is that one who is bewildered or one who has material desires, he cannot come to Krishna. So, like these two look like different ideas.
They're not two different ideas. They're different stages. Supposing someone has a material desire, and they like their material desire, that person cannot go to Krishna. Supposing another person has a material desire, they like to become free from the material desire and go to Krishna. That's Lord Brahma, and he wants. And there's a means. And he goes to Krishna. Take the microphone away from him. In the front up here. Oh, you have one. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. There's a question online from Bhaktin Sanya. She asked, you had mentioned that Radha and Krishna have different forms but are one entity.
Yes.
Why have different forms if they are both just Krishna?
Why not? For the purpose of love, two forms. The object of love and the abode of love, the one that feels love for the other. It's one entity in two forms for the sake of love. And then Radha expands so that love expands. Radha expands unlimited numbers of gopis. We're going to hear about that in text 37. For the purpose of expanding love, and love is Krishna's happiness expanding. Although he's unlimited, he who is unlimited is ever expanding through the agency of his own potencies. In this case, the internal pleasure potency. That's why. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I was thinking about yesterday's lecture in which we discussed the Gajendra pastime.
Yes.
And in one of the purports, the slide you showed, in that Prabhupada said that everyone should have some mantra so that they can remember it at the time of death.
Well, not exactly, he didn't say that, but go ahead.
Yes, and I was thinking that...
He's playing with the volume, just keep talking.
Okay. So, in the hexagonal, in Golok,
yes,
there is a mantra,
yeah,
Om Klem
Bhagavai, yes,
Krishna.
Yes.
And last time we said that one should not chant this mantra because one is, if in a bona fide succession, then they can chant it, otherwise there will not be any effect for that chanting. So my question or concern is, at one time, Prabhupada is saying that one should have some kind of a mantra to chant. Can
we have them. Govinda prayers.
Right. So can we just chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra?
Yes. But we can just chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Lots of people do that. Lots of people don't do even that. But the chanting of the Mahamantra, in addition, he's recommending. So how can I say otherwise? He's recommending others. He gives two samples. We're working with one of them. right now, this, you know, this seminar, so that we can understand what they are and enter it. So, text 30, for example, is like the one, you know, that's from text 3. Same type, but it's different in that it's accessible to anyone. Whereas that Gopal mantra is specifically to be received at the time. It's a Gayatri mantra that we receive at initiation. So once you chant these Govinda prayers for now, and then at the time of initiation, brahminical initiation, one will receive other mantras, and then one can chant those mantras too.
Should we include more mantras, or these mantras are sufficient?
These mantras are sufficient. However, Gayatri initiation or second initiation is also very nice. It's special in that these are mantras given in specific succession. Is that right? What was the puzzle? I don't get the puzzle.
I was thinking to include the hexagonal mantra.
Yeah.
And one should not.
For now, you, as you said, that I said, for now, don't do that. Take these nice Govinda prayers and do that. Later, you'll receive those other mantras and then you chant those too. Just chronologically, focus on this now and that later. Okay. Yes.
I had a couple of questions. First one is, as we understand, as we hear the beautiful pastimes of Krishna, then as we, how do we make sure we don't take it cheaply? Or because it's very sweet to hear, but a lot of times we hear or we talk about the tattva, which is the yoga, with mind and soul and the body, etc. So we focus on that, and but when we hear these, that's extremely sweet to hear. But how do we ensure that we don't cross the line and become samajya kind of person?
Well,
basically take it cheaply.
A few things in response to that question. One is, one must be and should continue to become firmly grounded in Sambandhagyan. Sambandhagyan means knowledge of the relationship of all things with Krishna. So one's eagerness for hearing should never go away from Sambandhagyan, thinking, oh, I've learned that. I want something new or higher or something like that. If the mind starts going in that direction, that's quite risky. Another, the brake pedal or the caution area is not just theoretical but practical realization of the identity of the self as the soul, not the body, in Prabhupada's words in Bhagavad Gita purport, beyond even the chance that one can engage in activities of sense gratification, pursuing fruitive activities. So one should cultivate that in addition to Sambandhagyan, the practical realization of my spiritual identity. The spiritual conception should be so firmly rooted and grounded. So, what I'm saying here, both of these are paying attention to the ABCs, even in advanced stages. And a third is wholesome association. You know, part of when people get into this, the likelihood of going off in a tangent that may be dangerous it's made easier when one is minus proper association. But stay always in proper association. So if you, you know, when you start heading for the ditch, somebody can bang you on the head and say, you know, go back in the middle of the road. Those are some cautions. Something else?
Can you, and the second point, I don't understand. The practical realization is very sense of spiritual identities. The second point which you mentioned, obviously, practical realization of spiritual identity, I didn't understand.
Okay. Read the purport of 241 Bhagavad Gita in the last paragraph. Earlier in the purport, Prabhupada writes, the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is, it doesn't say love of God, or going back to Godhead, or something. He says, is attaining something like, attaining the state of realization of one's true spiritual identity other than the body. Because you can't go to step two without step one, being secure. Then he repeats it at the end, like the in summary kind of message, in conclusion. One should practice Krishna consciousness in such a way that there's not even the possibility of being engaged in fruitive activities in pursuit of such gratification. Not like just tolerate, but, or not act on, but beyond, you know, to such a stage of absorption in the internal potency that the external potency can't touch you by the protection of the internal potency. The spiritual potency, the potency of devotional service. Yeah?
Can I ask the second question?
Okay, I thought that was... Go ahead. Yeah.
So when we talk about chanting Mahamantra, in Mahamantra, we are advised to only hear the mantra and not really imagine any filings.
Well, we certainly can, and we're not advised to imagine anything at any time, but we're to hear the mantra and meditate on its meaning. Prabhupada has given us the meaning. Mantras accompanied with meditating on this meaning. Hear the sound. And what is the meaning as we're hearing the sound? Please engage me in your service. It's a call for awakening of our service constitutional position. It's broad. And then comes specific. Service to Krishna, in which mood? What is our, these other mantras, what is our spiritual, like, a spiritual form? So we combine the two, Mahamantra and other mantras, Gayatri mantras, like this. One enhances the other, both ways. It's something similar to what I said earlier. These verses of Brahma Samhita, they're stimulations of ecstatic love. That's high. Ecstatic love is high. So we do that in combination with the service mood, Mahamantra. One in place of the other. You know, I have chanted Mahamantra and I'm graduating.
The idea is similar, that in Mahamantra also
we hear and meditate on the mood of service, and here also when you say
the mood, in a pervasive sense, like, please engage me in your service. Krishna, may I become attracted to only you Yavasayadikabhuti, that my attraction for other things or distraction from you will be taken away. It's focus through sound on the object of love. From the position of the abode of love, or the would-be abode of love. So that's the medium of service that then awakens and blossoms and becomes matured with some expression of love. The meaning of that expression is devotional service, and the inside is this spontaneous soul's jubilation towards Krishna of a particular rasa. Just the mature stage. Yes?
There are two questions on that.
Okay.
The first question is from Virajita Singh Mataji.
From who?
Virajita Singh Mataji.
Okay.
She says, you mentioned yantra along with mantra. What yantra should we focus on, and also should all Govinda prayers be chanted every day?
Well, we don't engage in the same process that Lord Brahma engaged in. I mentioned, we engage in deity worship specifically. This yantra is like a deity because it's depicting the abode of the Supreme Lord and all of his associates and everything that goes on in the abode of the Lord. That's a means which we were not given. I am unaware of any instruction Prabhupada ever gave about yantra utilization in our process. Although in Mayapur they have yantras on the Vishnu altar. So it's bona fide, but it's not prescribed for us. Deity worship is prescribed for us. So along with our chanting and hearing, we engage in deity worship. And the other question, should these be chanted, all the prayers every day? That's individual. I don't chant all the prayers every day, but I regularly chant the prayers, and there's certain prayers that somehow just they appear, especially by becoming, as I have become familiar with them. Just becomes part of your consciousness, the prayers. That's my experience anyway. Yes.
The second question is from Anand Bhatmani Prabhu. He says, Maharaj, I'm curious to know the meaning of Klim in the center of the yantra.
It's Radha Krishna. Very specific. Look in the purport of text 3 Brahma Samhita and you'll find the answer.
He also says, for some reason this word actually bothers me, being in the center.
Well, tell Krishna about you. God and Krishna at the center. That's the way it is. Okay.
Maharaj, I have one more question.
Okay.
In Bhagavad Gita 11.8, Sri Krishna blesses Arjuna with divine eyes so that the latter can see Krishna's cosmic form, right? And you mentioned that if we were to chant the mantras, or actually the Goswamis were able to view the entire pastime.
They would participate in.
So didn't they need special eyes?
Yeah, yes, we'll hear about that in text number 36, I think. Premanjana Charita. Bhakti Vilochanina. Stand by, we'll get there. It's the eye of the soul. And that's how the experiencing of Krishna's form, not these eyes, the eye of the soul. You'll hear. We'll get there.
Why did Arjuna need those divine eyes?
Why not? Krishna gave them to him. Others, it doesn't give an indication on the battlefield that others saw this universal form. Arjuna saw Obviously also Sanjaya saw, that's what the microphone movement was, right? Sanjaya saw, because Krishna gave him, because he's telling Dhritarashtra what's going on.
And
not only that, you know, in Mahabharata, in the assembly where Krishna came to give the peace message and Duryodhana rejected it, Duryodhana's plan was attack Krishna, grab him, put him in jail, and everyone will become defeated because Krishna is going to be, you know, in our captivity. They'll become very unenthusiastic. What a dumb move. So Krishna knew. Krishna exhibited a partial manifestation of the same thing that Arjuna saw. And you like details. And according to our acharyas, what Mother Yashoda saw within the mouth of Krishna when she was looking for dirt was the same thing that Krishna saw. The description is different, but according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it was the same thing. Her reaction was different than Arjuna's reaction because her bhava is different than Arjuna's bhava. Meditate on that one for a while. Okay, so we're going to end and have breakfast. What time will we come back?
Schedule says 9:30, but whatever you like now, because we want to be able to.
How much time do you all need for breakfast? Should we come back at 10? Is that good? 10? That's not too short of a time? 10 is good? Okay. See you all at 10.